Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. If you've been with us at all this week, you know that we've been marking the 30th anniversary of Madonna's debut album. Today, we're going to go all the way back to Madonna's roots in the Detroit area. In fact, let's check in with the Soundcheck listener line, where we've been collecting your Madonna moments. This one involves a concert in Detroit.
Oh my God, I'm on. My name is Andrew, I'm from Detroit, and I was totally in love with Madonna in the mid-80s. I went to see her at Cobo Hall, 1985, and I took my girlfriend, who was a Madonna wannabe. I was only dating her really because she looked so much like Madonna. And sorry if you're out there. And we had some like tier A tickets, you know, in the upper bowl there. And I left my girlfriend and snuck down into the front row and was in the front row for the show. And I didn't know how I was going to apologize for that. And then Madonna was like throwing trinkets out and props. And I caught a bunch of like doggy toy ice cream type things, and so I was able to give those to my girlfriend after the concert, and that was amazing.
Thanks, Andrew. Madonna in Detroit and getting out of Detroit is the subject of an early interview that we'll revisit in just a bit. And we'll hear from the rapper, singer, and songwriter Dessa. She's part of the Minnesota hip-hop collective Doomtree, and she has some Madonna memories to share and a bunch of new songs that she and her band will play live. So, in 1983, Madonna's self-titled debut album came out, and it was followed in due course by a string of hit songs. But let's skip ahead for a moment to 1998, exactly halfway through Madonna's now 30-year career, for a look at Madonna at the crossroads.
You're so consumed with how much you get. You waste your time with hate and regret. You're broken when your heart's not open.
If I could melt your heart. In 1998, Madonna released her album Ray of Light, and Ann Powers of NPR Music is going to step us through this really interesting chapter in her career. Hey, Ann.
How you doing, John?
Good. So, 1998, why is this record important? Where is Madonna in the arc of her career?
I suppose you would call Ray of Light a midlife, not crisis, perhaps a midlife enlightenment album. It is one of Madonna's most critically acclaimed albums, and in fact, one in which I think she really poured her heart and soul. She had recently given birth to her daughter, Lourdes, mm-hmm. and she was getting into some new stuff, and it really showed on this record, both musically and in terms of the lyrics.
So getting away from the material girl and into, you know,
into the immaterial girl. Into
yeah. What was your first reaction on hearing this? Because it does have a different sound to it.
Well, let's place Ray of Light firmly in the context of the late 90s in New York City, which is where Madonna was mostly living at the time. That was a time when the yoga craze was going full bore mm-hmm. in New York. I was doing yoga every day in New York. I don't know about you, but I was back in those days. And so was Madonna. She had recently gotten involved in doing serious yoga. She was also discovering Kabbalah, which she continues to pursue to this day,
right.
The
Jewish
mysticism,
mystical yeah.
practice. And all of those experiences were feeding her creativity and leading her to try to make music that had a different kind of meaning than what she'd done before. I don't think it's fair to say that Madonna had never made music about spiritual matters. I mean, like a prayer, of course,
sure.
in its own way. But she was really very consciously working to, I guess, grow up, reach a new level of maturity and of seriousness on this record, and also mining music at the time that was also kind of spiritually minded.
So a song like Shanti Ashtangi, which, you know, sounds like it comes right out of the practice of yoga, or even more basic, from Hindu religious thought.
Shanti Ashtangi is a form of kirtan, the chanting tradition that people like Krishna Das were doing around New York City at that time. And I interviewed Madonna. The only time I've interviewed her in person was for Ray of Light. And that's how I connected with her, was talking about yoga and singing kirtan and all of the spiritual pursuits that she was doing at the time. She was very serious about it and excited to be able to put that into her music and possibly make it into pop.
Vande Guru Nan Charanaravinde Sandarshita Swatma Sukhava Bote Nishreyase Jangalikaya Mande Samsara Hala Hala Moha Shantiye. Guru Shankaram Shankara Chakrasi Abahu Guru Shankaram Shankara Chakrasi Taharinam Taharinam
That is Madonna from the 1998 album Ray of Light and Shanti Ashtangi, which, as Ann Powers, music critic from NPR Music, has told us, is based on the practice of kirtan singing. Folks like Krishna Das and numerous others were actually doing quite well with this back in the 90s, the late 90s. That was not one of the hits, Ann.
No, but no, I think it was a little, esoteric,
yeah.
Even though it was Madonna, you know.
But even a deep cut like that shows the influence of another person that we need to talk about, and that is William Orbit, who was already, you know, making a name for himself on the other side of the Atlantic, and brings this kind of techno/trance sound to the proceedings.
Well, John, I know you were a fan of William Orbit before you ever heard this album.
Yeah.
And I became familiar with William Orbit because he worked with one of my favorite British singer-songwriters of the time, Beth Orton.
Sure.
He was definitely a pioneer in blending electronic elements with kind of that trance, Eastern-influenced sound on the edge of New Age, but not really New Age. And I think what Madonna heard in him was a kind of a lushness that she wanted for this record. I mean, techno and rave was happening in the 90s and had a lot of different forms. You know, there was very experimental, more hard stuff like Aphex Twin. There was party stuff like Fatboy Slim. That's not what Madonna wanted for this. She wanted something more like a singer-songwriter, really. And William Orbit provided her with that.
So do you think she went to William Orbit because she wanted that sound, or did she sense some kind of connection with him and he kind of brought the sound to her? How do you think that went?
Well, in the context of her career, she had recently worked with Babyface on a record called Bedtime Stories, another one of my favorite Madonna records, and actually started working with him again, but decided to go in a different direction. And if you think about Babyface, R&B producer, you know, famous for working, famous for creating really beautiful pop hits with many different artists, including himself, it has a similar sound in a way. You know, it's pretty, it's soft, it's like you want to lay down in it. And so I think that's what Madonna was looking for, something that was going to yield this feeling of relaxation, you know, that she's getting from doing yoga, I guess. But then also she wanted something more upbeat and dancey, and which she got on some of the hits on this record, and Orbit could provide that as well.
So Ray of Light, the title track, was the second single, and it was a top 10 hit, reaching as high as number 5 here in the States. This is from Madonna's Ray of Light. Madonna, title track from the 1998 album Ray of Light. It is Madonna Week on Soundcheck, and NPR music critic Ann Powers is remembering Madonna's transitional album, the 1998 record Ray of Light. She had just become a mom. She's working with William Orbit, who brings this very British sound. I mean, you mentioned, Ann, that she was living here in New York at the time, but there's a lot of Britpop, a lot of British electronica going on in this record.
Yes, anticipating Madonna's move to London later, right. I suppose, and her interest in all things British. That song, in fact, has a very strong guitar element, and as you noted, has a Britpop side, and that was another thing Madonna was doing during this time, was experimenting with learning how to play guitar. Mm-hmm. And so she's really going through this growth thing and trying to combine things, but I think that was a hit partly because it has that mix of dance and rock, and it's just such a joyous song. I mean, I have a friend, she might be listening today, she lives in New York, who actually walked down the aisle, she and her groom, to Ray of Light during this time.
Walked or maybe
danced down the aisle.
So that was a top 10 hit on both sides of the Atlantic. But Anne, when we talk about this record, what are your favorite tracks?
I love the whole record, honestly. I like to listen to it as a whole. But one that I would pull out as a favorite is Little Star. It's a song about Madonna's oldest daughter, and her experience of motherhood and her hopes for her daughter. And I think any of us who are parents can still relate to this song. It's such a sweet lullaby of a song. And hearing that coming from Madonna, too, you know, Madonna, she's like the careerist, the material girl, the one who's willing to put herself, in a way, in front of anything and anyone else. Here she is, just pouring her heart out very gently to a child. I still adore this song.
Little Star from Madonna's Ray of Light.
God gave a present to me, made of flesh and bones, my life, my song. You made my spirit.
Little Star, Madonna's song to her recently born daughter from the 1998 album Ray of Light. We're looking back at this unusual moment in Madonna's career with NPR music critic Ann Powers. It's part of our week-long series, Madonna Week, on Soundcheck. And you can tell us about your Madonna moment by calling us and leaving a voicemail at 866-939-1612. And there is a kind of tension in a lot of the songs on this record, Little Star is a good example, between the kind of slow, ballady singing and this almost frantic, you know, light but frantic percussion that's driving the electronics behind her.
Exactly. That is connected to drum and bass music and other forms of British electronic dance music. But that idea of going so fast that it becomes slow.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having a conversation with Ben Watt from Everything But the Girl around this time. Remember, they had a huge drum and bass album
mm-hmm.
in this time period. And he talked about that, about how you just got to this place where the beat slowed down because you had hit that moment when you couldn't process how fast it was anymore. And I love that idea. And I actually think it's connected to physical practices like yoga. It's about breath. It's about thinking about the rhythm of your body and how, you know, accelerating in one way may bring you relaxation in the other. I see it all connected. I see Madonna's ideas and her spiritual pursuits really playing out in the sound of this music.
Yeah. Now, when you interviewed her around the time of this release, was she that explicit about her yoga practice, you know, sort of informing the way the record sounded?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing Madonna was going through at that time, beyond her own personal life changes and confrontations with herself, was really becoming an artist at midlife. I mean, now she's truly an artist at midlife, but then she was out of the youth category.
Mm.
She couldn't really ride that image of the young sex symbol anymore. So she needed to find a way to be a mature artist. I think she did it with Bedtime Stories by experimenting with R&B. In some ways, she even did it with her groundbreaking album, Erotica, which was really adventurous in terms of sexuality. But Ray of Light is about saying, look, I am an adult, I have a family, I have depth, and I'm going to make sound out of those feelings.
So could a 25-year-old Madonna have written a song like The Power of Goodbye?
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about how I chose The Power of Goodbye as another favorite from the album. And of all the songs on the album, in some ways it connects to earlier points in her career. One, because it was co-written with Patrick Leonard, her longtime guitarist, who she's written a lot with over the years. And two, because although it is, again, a message of learning how to respond to things in adult ways, you know, kind of a central tenet of any Eastern philosophy, you know,
mm-hmm.
non-attachment.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about that. But it's also a classic ballad in the Madonna tradition. You know, it has that heartfelt feeling, that feeling of a woman standing up and speaking for herself and letting out who she is. Madonna, we always think of as the great dance music artist, you know, the great party girl. But from the very start of her career, she's had great ballads. And I think The Power of Goodbye fits in that category.
This is from Madonna's album, Ray of Light.
Your heart is not open.
Called The Power of Goodbye from Madonna's 1998 album Ray of Light. NPR music critic Ann Power is telling us that this is one of her favorite albums by Madonna in a long career full of twists and turns. And how did this particular twist set up what she would be doing, you know, in the next decade?
Well, I think it set Madonna up as someone who was going to continue to experiment with new trends, new sounds, which she's done ever since, you know, and be out there trying to make music that fits on the dance floor, make music that fits in the lives of young people as well as people her age. I love that about Madonna. I don't think it's always succeeded
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
the years after Ray of Light, but I love the fact that she continues to be current, to live in the moment, if you will. And also, I think Ray of Light is a model for younger artists now who perhaps will look to it when they are confronting that moment of midlife. Honestly, John, I can hear Katy Perry making her own ray of light in maybe a decade.
All right.
I hope she does.
You know, Madonna followed this in 2 years later with the album simply called Music, where she kind of makes explicit the connection between this techno-trance tradition and the ancient trance traditions of, like, the Sufi dervishes in Central Asia and places like that. So it really did seem to kind of point in a direction that she would then follow. Has the album aged well?
That's an interesting question. Definitely, it sounds like the time it was made. Let me make a comparison for you.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Bush, perhaps my favorite female artist of all time, perhaps my favorite artist of all time.
You will get no argument from me.
Her early albums, in a way, sound dated, you know? I mean, she was one of the first artists to experiment with the Fairlight, the record The Dreaming, you know.
Right. The Fairlight is an early computer music instrument, a synthesizer.
Exactly. And those records sound like their time, you know, like the early 80s. And still, those are records we can learn from because of the imagination of the artist, the messages of the songs, and the way that the lyrics connect to the sounds on the record. And I feel the same way about Ray of Light. Definitely, dance music is in a completely different place. I'm not going to say in a better place necessarily now, but a different place. And Madonna's record sounds like the late 90s. But the perfect marriage of sound and message and voice on this record, I think, makes it valuable at any time.
Madonna's album from 1998 called Ray of Light. We've been speaking with NPR music critic Ann Powers, part of our week-long Madonna series here on Soundcheck. And Ann, always great to speak with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Young velvet porcelain boy, devour me when you're with me. Blue-ish window sea. Perfume girl.
Up next, Madonna Week continues when we talk with a Detroit news writer about Madonna's hometown history. This is Soundcheck. Hey, it's John Schaefer. Before we get back to our Madonna Week here on Soundcheck, I want to remind you that you still have time to join our Remix the Mayor Challenge. Go to soundcheck.org for all the details and to download clips of New York City mayors, past and present, that are yours for the remixing. Here's just one of the submissions we've received so far.
Queen, this boom, boom, boom. I need a little booty. Boom, boom, boom. Baby, such a big butt.
I believe
happiness is rather thick. That ass.
I would say
$1 million booty. $1 million booty is too much. Is too much. I realize
to get pleasure is hard work.
But that's gotta be done.
One of the greatest
clean queen booty is boom boom.
Thanks to Mossad for that submission to our Remix the Mayor Challenge. You can send us yours by Sunday night, September 29th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern. And now, back to Madonna. So, earlier in the show, we heard from our listener, Andrew, who said he saw Madonna at Cobo Hall in downtown Detroit during her 1985 The Virgin Tour. That was a homecoming of sorts for Madonna because she grew up outside of Detroit. In fact, just a year earlier, in 1984, Detroit News reporter Susan Whitehall interviewed Madonna about growing up there in Michigan. Now, 30 years later, Madonna's still making music, and Susan Whitehall is still writing about it for the Detroit News as a music features and entertainment writer, and she joins us on the line. Susan, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks.
So this interview that you did with Madonna was published in September of 1984. We've archived it on our website at soundcheck.org. At this point, the debut album had been out for about a year, right?
Yeah, about that.
And had you guys all followed her career? I mean, was it known that she was from the area at that point?
It was just beginning to be known. I had just jumped over to the news from Cream Magazine, where we kind of kept track of that stuff a little more than mainstream papers. And so I sort of knew about it before my editors at the news did. And it's like, hey, this woman's from Detroit. Let's do something. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So she was that really was heating up, and I was surprised that nobody had done the Detroit connection on her yet, now, because Borderline was getting a lot of airplay.
Right. So now she grew up in Rochester, right?
Rochester, yeah.
Rochester.
And,
how far is that from Detroit?
It's a kind of a far north suburb. At that point, that would be, you wouldn't want to live much further north if you were driving into Detroit for any sort of job. So it was pretty far north, maybe 45 minutes if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm. So possible for someone living there to sort of be a regular on the music scene in Detroit proper if they wanted to.
Yes, but you know what? I think she was doing that more as a U of M student, from what she was telling me.
University of Michigan.
Because of the age she was, mm-hmm. she was too young for the Grandy Ballroom scene or anything like that. But she was definitely old enough to come in from U of M to go to Bookies in the punk rock scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was at Cream. She was just a normal girl at Bookies with ripped up clothing, you know, coming up on her little Mustang, as she said, with all the dance guys. And the other thing she did that I did, too, is she went to the gay bar next door to Bookies, which was the big punk club, and the place was called Frank Gagan's. And what you did was you went there to dance. So she was doing kind of what she did in New York later on, here in Detroit first.
Right. But people, you know, people here in New York, you know, if you went to Danceteria in 1983, you might have known who Madonna was. Would people on the scene there in Detroit have known who she was? I mean, she wasn't playing out or anything, right?
Oh, no, because she dropped out of U of M and went to New York and pretty much stayed there. She wasn't playing here at all. So by the time she did play here, she was a pretty big star.
In the interview, and again, the full interview that Susan Whitehall did in 1984 with Madonna is on our website, soundcheck.org. There's a moment, Susan, where you ask her, can a girl make it as a singer in Detroit? And she says, if Motown was still there, it'd be great, but I think you have to go to one of the coasts. I imagine that Eminem might beg to differ, but, I guess she felt like she couldn't have made it if she had stayed in Detroit. How did this interview play with your readers back then?
I'm really not sure about that. I mean, I know when I interviewed her, she was in her apartment in New York. She was very down to earth, very, very Michigan accent, you know. And so I think it was just sort of an introduction to her. They didn't have any opinion about her yet. It was too early. So it was more, and you remember that first single, it really was the first and only time she sounded overtly Detroit. It sounded kind of Motown-esque.
Yeah.
It had that soul edge to it a little bit. So I think it was kind of like, well, who is this girl? She's from Detroit. She's got that little soul sound. This is interesting. But then she went on from there just to kind of in a whole different direction and became Madonna that we know.
We're speaking with Susan Whitehall, music features and entertainment writer for the Detroit News, author of several books, including Fever, Little Willie John's Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and The Birth of Soul. And we're talking about Susan's 1984 interview with Madonna. You also, in the early 90s, wrote a profile of one of Madonna's former boyfriends, a landscaper in northern Michigan. Now, why did you do that story?
You know, I'd forgotten about that until you brought it up, really. A friend of a friend or someone called me or something, probably. At that point, it was, you know, people were interested in any contact or any personal contact, any friends, whatever, of her. And
mm-hmm.
So that's probably what that was. And her siblings, she has such a big family. We would always check in usually with one or another of them when they were in town, or some of them never left town, you know.
Yeah. Are they still there? Do they still live in the area?
I think maybe one or two of them, but mostly not. There is a few up in northern Michigan, and her one brother has some. He's got some issues, and he's been homeless up in the Traverse City area. But I know her father has the vineyard up in Leelanau, and I think at least one of her sisters works for the vineyard, and at least one or two of the siblings work for their dad.
Mm-hmm. So she came out of the Detroit area, but, you know, had all of her success here in New York on the coast, as she basically told you in that 84 interview. Last year, her MDNA tour came through town and played the Joe Louis Arena. And that Joe Louis Arena date in the MDNA tour was November 9th of 2012. President Obama had been reelected just 3 days earlier.
Yes.
And she was very happy about that. And apparently much of her audience was not. Here's a clip from that concert at the MDNA tour in Detroit.
It's no secret that I'm ecstatically happy to be here. It's also no secret that I'm ecstatically happy that Obama is our president.
So they're with her at the start. She's glad to be there in Detroit. You hear all the whooping and hollering. She mentions Obama. The initial reaction seems, you know, enthusiastic, and then the boos begin there. Do the music fans in Detroit, Susan, still love her? I mean, do they see her as a hometown hero, someone who came from the area and made good?
Oh, I think so, and yet she kind of hasn't come back a lot, so... It's kind of, okay, we love you, but don't push it, you know. You know, a homegirl has not been back. You haven't donated money. You haven't really, you know, funded any parks or anything. Kind of like Diana Ross. It's, we love you, but okay.
What have you done for us lately?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can find Susan Whitehall's 1984 interview with Madonna for the Detroit News on our website at soundcheck.org. Susan's latest book is Fever, Little Willie John's Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and the Birth of Soul. And Susan, it's been fun taking this little trip down memory lane with you. Thanks very much.
Oh, thank you.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop.
Up next, from Michigan to Minnesota, we hear live music from the Minneapolis electropop artist Dessa, coming up next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The rapper Dessa has used her unique voice to help power the Twin Cities hip-hop collective known as Doomtree, but Dessa's not just a rapper. She's also a singer and songwriter. On her newly released solo album called Parts of Speech, Dessa asserts herself as a vocalist and writer with a sweeping new set of songs about relationships, community, and empowerment. Here's Dessa with her band and a song called Call Off Your Ghost, live on Soundcheck.
Yeah. shake hands, we carry the secrets that it takes. Saying something crazy.
I don't think badly of her.
I hope she makes you happy.
It's just a lot to ask to watch your future walking past me.
And I know that jealousy is a perfect waste of time. Left a magic passage. I've spent far too long wasting. I've spent far too long wasting mine.
That is Dessa and a song called Call Off Your Ghost. You'll find it on her new album called Parts of Speech, which is out now. Dessa singing, Abby Wolf singing and playing keyboards, Dustin Kyle playing keyboards and guitar, Joey Van Phillips behind our drum kit, Sean McPherson playing the bass. Dessa, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
So Parts of Speech is the name of the record. What's your favorite part of speech? Are you a noun person, a verb person?
I would say I'm a verb person, probably.
So it's all about the action, the doing of things.
Oh, gosh. I think in writing, I'm a verb person, but I suppose writing isn't the most active way to interact with the world. So.
Well, it can be. I mean, you know, we've certainly seen music move a lot of people in a lot of different parts of the world to different things. Has your writing changed as your use of your voice has gone more from rapping to more singing?
I think so. I mean, I think initially when I started making music, it was like if I wasn't singing or rapping, then I wasn't doing my job. So my impulse was to like paint every corner of the room. You know, I wasn't yet really comfortable with harnessing negative space.
Hmm.
And so I felt like, man, I got to earn my keep. I better get all the syllables in.
So the idea as a singer as opposed to a rapper where, you know, you got both the rhyming scheme and the internal rhyming scheme and all the meter and you're working with all that. The idea of negative space, if sometimes you need to just lay back.
Chill out, you know, I think in both rap and in song now, I'm more likely to say, you know, I wonder if there's something I could cut. Or maybe there's a note we could hold, or maybe something that isn't vocal.
So has the production of the songs changed as well? Because if I think of something like Dixon's Girl, for example, which you know has like a sample going through it, this album Maybe I'm wrong, but this album sounds like it's really a band album.
Yeah, this is the first album where, in addition to working with some of the Doomtree producers, most notably Paper Tiger and Laserbeak, I worked with the live band that we just heard to write songs from the ground up. And it was a totally and completely different and terrifying and rewarding experience. So.
You mentioned Laserbeak and the guys from Doomtree, POS and the rest, you know, they're a good example of what to outsiders might be a surprising scene there in the Twin Cities. What else is going on there? I mean, it's sort of been a hub for lots of different types of music.
At least as long as I've been making music actively. I mean, Minneapolis has a storied, you know, past with acts like The Replacements and the like. And then in the past...
And that other guy, what's the little guy's name?
The little guy, I don't know. He
King,
shall
Emperor,
not be named.
Yeah, Prince.
The Dauphin. Dauphin. But yeah, the rap scene has been really vibrant, I would say, for the past 15 years at least, you know, in large part... probably due to the entrepreneurship of Rhymesayers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Doomtree is one of the many groups who has helped to build on and benefit from that kind of tradition there.
Now, is it possible that the music world might actually lose you at some point to the world of academia? I mean, you've apparently been doing some, like, lecturing and stuff like that.
I've never answered that question. I think that I want to make music as long as it looks and feels genuine. But I think my interest in songwriting, it always came initially from like a language arts perspective. So I don't think I'm going to bail and go teach. But at some point, even after I'm able to like tour in a 15-passenger van, I hope to be writing books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fiction, nonfiction?
Nonfiction, creative nonfiction. Yeah.
Now, what does that mean, creative nonfiction?
It's a stupid name for a really sexy thing. So it's like... everybody has like a friend who's just good at telling stories, almost irrespective of how engaging those stories might be in another person's hands.
Right.
Okay.
Like, so like J.J. Sullivan did that book of essays like a year or two
and
ago.
I haven't read Sullivan, so I can't comment on it. But
like
Dave
Eggers, I found
Eggers,
myself reading things. I was like, why am I interested in
this? I have
no
vested interest in this.
Yeah,
in fact, I think I don't care at all about this, you know?
Yeah.
But I think even at a bar, you have the guy who goes, oh, wait, hold on. Let Freddie tell it. You know, that stories just work out because the timing is right. And if there is like a little twist to be capitalized on, Freddie can do it. And that's the kind of writing I like, where it's not story driven as much as it is like kind of riding around on the shoulder of somebody you'd like to spend some time with.
Yeah. So is that how you are approaching songwriting these days? Are they little compact stories that you hope maybe to unpack in another form someday?
I would say that most of them are true. So that would probably be a connection between the literary interest and the songwriting interest. I'd say 70-80% of the stuff I write is almost literally borrowed from a lived experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your own or friends?
Mostly my own. It's like I don't want to throw people under the bus. Okay. You know. So.
You want to play one of those songs for us now?
Yeah,
you want to do Skeleton Key?
Let's do it.
All right. We're speaking with Dessa. She and her band are playing on Sunday, September 22nd, here in New York at the Bowery Ballroom. She and the band are here with us in the Soundcheck studio today, playing some songs from her latest record called Parts of Speech. This one's called Skeleton Key. It's Dessa, live on Soundcheck.
Skeleton key, I'm still working on me. I always feel
called Skeleton Key from the singer-songwriter Dessa and her band playing live here in the Soundcheck studio. The album's called Parts of Speech. It is out now. Let's hear another song from it, The Man I Knew, Dessa, live on Soundcheck.
That you told me it was already plain that you changed. But your conscience was clean and as white as a line of cocaine. My back to the wall of your bedroom apartment. You're talking in circles, got two cigarettes burning. And I couldn't hide, how afraid I was to see you so strange. Don't get me wrong, I've got no will. My civilian life, I spent it good news waiting, 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 waiting for you. You charmed the snake, you picked the card, you bent the spoon. The curve pain, the shape's change. You've it's made to play the fool. But I don't know what that stuff does to you. And I don't know. I spent a decade in love with you, and I can't tell if you're here, cause the man I knew, I don't think that he can hear me now. So did you count it to? It's just too far. A glass of easy choices. Who am I? And who am I? And who am I to tell you to come down? For me, I knew. I don't think that he can do.
Once again, that's music from Dessa and her band live on Soundcheck. The song's called The Man I Knew. You'll find it on her latest record called Parts of Speech. And Dessa, all this week on the program, we've sort of been marking the 30th anniversary of Madonna's first record.
That's insane.
The untitled. What's insane? Us doing that?
Or no,
the fact that she's been around for 30 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've been asking our listeners, our guests, even our musical guests, if, for a Madonna moment.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
Can I do two super quick ones?
Yeah.
Okay. Eighth grade graduation, I did a medley of Richard Marx and Madonna's This Used to Be My Playground and got so overclamped, like, at the prospect of leaving my eighth grade class. I think I flubbed through it.
So you actually did this in front of the class?
Like shaking, you know, like the shaking hands, shaking knees, and shaking voice box, yeah, performed at, like, the graduation ceremony. It was, like, my first public singing experience was seeing Madonna.
Wow.
And then more fun, you know that song, Material Girl?
Yes, I think I've heard that occasionally.
Right? My favorite thing to do with my brother was to try to smoothly sing that chorus, but each of us trading syllables.
Oh, so, like a Hockett
like
thing.
I.
Ma.
Meh. See how it is.
Yeah.
If you can do it really
fast,
can
do it,
it
really,
sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And you sort of, if you like get in the zone,
yeah.
I've never been there, but
right.
You know, you forget who's doing what, but somehow it all works out. I mean,
yeah.
I've seen people do that.
If you're driving with a companion and, you know, if you're commuting, it's worth, like, after this program, giving it a go. Give it a go. It's more fun than it sounds.
All right. The album is called Parts of Speech. Dessa and the band playing Sunday at the Bowery Ballroom and playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
This is a dream for us. Thanks for having us on.
Wrap up, I want to tell you about this week's Check Ahead, an album you can stream in full at soundcheck.org before it's released. This week we're featuring the latest from the indie Americana band known as Ha Ha Tonka. Their new record's called Lessons, and it's full of mandolins and four-part harmonies, and is shaped as much by bluegrass and gospel as by garage rock. Here's a song called Dead to the World.
Dead to the world, I'm not dead to the world, I'm just dead to the world around me. With my eyes closed so tightly at all the possibilities, I'm surprised I could see. Oh, that I was dead to the world around me. No, I don't wanna be dead to the world.
Dead to the World from the band Ha Ha Tonka. Their upcoming album is streaming exclusively in this week's Check Ahead on our website, soundcheck.org. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow on the show, we wrap up our Madonna week with a look at what's happening in the pop star's career today. And we'll hear some more Madonna moments from all of you. Plus, the popular play-along video game Rock Band recently announced an indefinite hiatus. We'll chart the rise and fall of the musical game. and live music from J. Roddy Walston and The Business as the group returns to the Soundcheck studio with their new album, Essential Tremors. All of that is tomorrow. I'm John Schaefer. Join me then. This is Soundcheck.